Hola! Welcome to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita, the only Spanglish anti-diet podcast that teaches you from a sociological lens, feminism, and intuitive eating coaching to dismantle diet culture. I'm your host, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez, and I am passionate about dismantling diet culture and helping you heal your relationship with food and your body. I'm a mother, daughter, comadre, amiga, community member, professor, health coach, and published author. On this show, I share my personal experience with diet culture, tips and strategies, and educational content to help you understand diet culture and systems of oppression so that you can have the tools to challenge diet culture. Current and future generations do not deserve to inherit your diet culture trauma, and I'm here to help you. If you're on a mission to heal your body and food traumas and embody your authentic self unapologetic, welcome to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita. Hola, bienvenidos a Dismantling Diet Culture, Fuck Being Calladita. This is your host, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez. Bienvenidos, welcome. Ooh, I am excited. I was teary earlier because this is an amazing guest that I'm going to go ahead and introduce shortly. But I do want to say that when I started social media, one of the first accounts that I started following was Dalina from Your Latina Nutritionist and Shana. Which I will introduce shortly. And I love the work that she's doing in moving the conversation forward of undieting. And she's a registered dietitian. So without further ado, let me go ahead and introduce her. Shana is a registered dietitian, nutritionist based in Brooklyn, New York. She describes herself as an all foods fit dietitian. Life is already complicated. Why restrict yourself unnecessarily? She creates a platform for open discussion on nutrition and wellness topics that are inclusive, non-diet, and weight neutral, all with an intersectionality of social justice. Bienvenida.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here because I'm also a big fan.
Oh my goodness. I love your work. And before we go into like what led to this work, who is Shana? Who was Shana as a child?
Oh gosh, it's so funny because I was actually recently having this conversation with my mom, and she said that there's such a big difference in my personality. I mean, I guess that's how we all are as children, you know, like we grow up, but she says that there's such a big difference in my personality. And I don't know what it is. I think I identify as an introvert. So I'm always a little bit more of observing folks first or observing the atmosphere, you know, but I just have this confidence now of speaking my mind. And I think that's what she was trying to get across. Like, that's not how I was as a kid, which is understandable. So I don't know. I just, there's a big difference. And I really love just speaking out and saying things, you know. Listen, we all get the backlash from folks who are not ready to hear those things, but I really do think that it's important to speak out on what you are passionate about, which is what I try to do.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. I love that, you know, your mom seeing your growth. And yeah, it does require a lot of courage and confidence to show up on social media because of the nature of the work that we're doing, right? And that's why I just love you and I admire you and like keep going and keep taking care of yourself. And let's unpack a little bit more this, like, as women of color, you know, being outspoken and being confident. Can you recall, like, was there a pivotal moment or moments in your life that led to this Shana that we have today?
I think it's just more getting older and getting more confident. I think that's really the best things about getting older. You know, we, like, in society in general, I think there's this fear of aging. But I think one of the great things is just starting to get this confidence that you didn't have when you were younger. And, you know, it's funny that we always talk about, or I hear a lot about people saying, oh, you know how really older folks, right? Like in their 70s, 80s, they walk around, they do not care, you know, they give zero F's. And it's like, yeah, because once you reach that age, it's like you have this confidence and you know, so I feel myself slowly getting to that point.
I love it. I love this. And I feel the same way. I mean, not only do I love your work, but like I was, you know, I found out that you're also Leo, you're August. I was like, oh, we share all these things in common. Yes. And this sentiment of getting older and feeling more comfortable in your own skin. And for me, like embracing my own voice and still in that journey. But you can use F words here, like at that stage of like, you give a fuck, you know, what other people are going to say. Yeah. You're going to be criticized. You know, we women of color, we're always all the time. If we do good or we didn't do good enough, there's we're always criticized, you know, so fuck it.
Like, yeah, exactly. That,
you know,
exactly. And like, it's just too much.
It is too much. And this, you know, connecting it to like diet culture, this is rooted in white supremacy. This is rooted in systems of oppression, right? And so by speaking up, it's like, you're owning your power, right? So that's so beautiful. I'm glad to know that this is where you're at with this confidence. And tell me about your relationship with food and body image growing up.
So I really didn't start having issues until I would say college, which I know is rare. And I think that, I'm not sure, to be honest, I think it was really just college being this new environment, this this place of over, you know, you're coming from a home and I'm an only child. So, you know, I was just very used to, this freedom and just being overwhelmed. And I think, and it's weird because I definitely grew up in diet culture, right? Like even my dad was an athlete. So he was always talking about weight and all this stuff, yet it didn't affect me until I would say college when for some reason it just came like tenfold. And so that's when I remember starting to track every single thing I wrote or sorry, I ate. I mean, I'm talking if I had, let's say a handful of grapes, I would write that down. Like that's how quote unquote bad that was. And, you know, and I was in a thin body, right? Like that's just, you know, honestly, just genetics. And so it just had this like weird mind fuck basically, and writing everything down, counting, and it carried through my 20s, my early 20s, when I started really getting into dance again. Like I had taken dance before, but like really getting into it. And then I had a teacher who did not do this on purpose, but once you start, you know, exercising a lot, and then you get compliments on your body, you're like, well, how much farther can I go? And that was just, I think that's my 20s were just the epitome of very scary, you know, pretty much eating disorder territory and kind of getting out of that because, you know, as women of color, Black women, you know, eating disorders don't affect us, quote unquote. That's what we're told, right? And so I never would think that. That's why I didn't, you know, didn't get help or anything. Luckily I was able to get out of that, but it really started in college. And then slowly just in my 20s kind of just, you know, opened up. For sure.
What, thank you for sharing that. And, you know, for, I'm a college professor and I know there's students who listen to this is, you know, you're not alone in your struggle. There's so many external factors. There's a lot of stress. There's acculturation. There's like you're homesick. There's so many factors that contribute to this, right? And it's not your fault. You know, it's not your fault. It's the system that we're in that is so toxic. So
100%. Thank you.
Yeah. How did you begin this healing journey of undieting?
Yeah, I think, and you know, in my, so I talked about the dance in my 20s and I loved it. Like I still dance, you know, don't get me wrong. But also what contributed to that was just being super unhappy. I used to work in fashion and it is every, unfortunately for me, my experience, right? Not everybody, but my experience was just every stereotype that you think of with fashion. And I worked for some big names who I won't name, but very recognizable names. And it was just such a toxic place for me personally. And I didn't feel like I was able to control that environment. So I felt, I think in a way, I'm like doing therapy on myself right now. In a way I was able to control the food. I think I felt like superior, like, well, I can control my body and my food intake. And that also contributed to it. And I think that how I got out of that was really just realizing I didn't want to work in fashion anymore. At the time, I had a weird, what we would refer to as orthorexia, which is just this pretty much an unhealthy fixation on the ingredients and being healthy, like, you know, and so that led me to want to do nutrition and to want to change careers. And I did, I started, you know, I went to school, did all that. And I did start to feel better about myself. And I think that helped. Granted, did I get into nutrition for the right reasons? Right? No, but it did help. It did help me get out of that mental space of feeling like I had to control every bite, or, you know, that spiral. Yeah.
You know, when I talk to therapists and other health professionals, they say, oh, I went in for the wrong reasons. You know, I was giving myself therapy. I was going to fix myself.
We all do it, right?
Yes. It's like, yes. Oh, God. But, you know, I'm glad that you did get your degrees in nutrition, right? You're a dietitian and nutritionist or dietitian?
It's a dietitian / nutritionist. That's like the official, like RDN, that's what it stands for. Yeah.
Yes. Tell me, so let's pivot to now when you started, you know, school, college and your degree in this area. I'm sure that what you were learning was very diet culture.
Oh, for sure. I always say that, going to school for really any health profession, but, you know, definitely dietetics, it's basically you're getting your degree in diet culture, you know, with the classes, you know, fat phobia 101, I always call it that. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, which I'm sure we'll get into, it's, you know, because diet culture stems from this white supremacy. So that's 101. Or I should say that's 202, class 202. But it's, you know, it's all of these things that we're told. So we're told to memorize stereotypes, you know, of what, and not just of people in larger bodies, right? But also of people of color. We're told that they have, you know, all of these diseases and illnesses they do to themselves. And that's what we're taught. And even as people of color, we're like, you know, why aren't we eating healthier? Why aren't we doing this?
Because we see it, right? In our families, in our community, exactly. We internalize that. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It really is. And I think now that it's being sort of talked about more, maybe we're recognizing it, but not enough. You know, I still, which I talk about, I try to as much as possible, this healthism, which is, you know, when people say the onus is on the individual for their health. And it's not. We're talking about all of these socioeconomic barriers, all of these environmental barriers, and not to mention racism. Like, racism was finally mentioned as a public health crisis.
Yeah,
like,
it kills people.
We're in 24, right? So it's, you know, it's finally we're talking about it, but still not enough.
So you think that the field, you know, for anyone who's listening and who wants to go into dietetics or nutrition, any health field in general. And then we want to be like honest, and we're not being pessimistic, y'all. We just want to keep it real. So I think that it still needs a lot of work.
I do. And that's the thing. Nothing's perfect. And, you know, there, I always say, actually, I saw this quote from Congresswoman AOC, actually, and it kind of stuck with me. She was obviously not talking about nutrition, but it really is where she said, people think that I don't love my country, right? People think that I don't love my country because I'm always trying to change it. And she said, I actually love being an American, which is why I want to make it better. Yeah. And yes to that, of course. but also I think about that with nutrition too. I do love being a health professional. I love nutrition, dietetics, all of that. I think it's fascinating, but I love it, but I know that it needs change, which would make other people love it as well. Other people, you know, because nothing's perfect. Like no one, I personally don't believe in the word perfection.
Of course.
But yeah, I think about that a lot when she said that. I was like, yeah,
It's true. Yeah. You know, and especially because us as women of color, and I teach sociology, and of course I center race and intersectionality in everything I do. And many years ago, must have been when I started teaching, I had a student who said, "Why are you obsessed with race? Why are you anti-American?" And I was like, "Oh no, you got the wrong impression." You know, like she told me at the end of the semester, I was like, "Oh." So I make sure, you know, to every semester to tell students why I do what I do and what I teach and how I teach it. Because you're right, we want to make our communities, we want to make society a better place and our profession, because we're we have this conviction and we're committed, right? And we want other folks to fall in love with the work that we do, that they will eventually do, right?
Exactly. That's the whole point. So, yeah.
So then from, you were slowly then pivoting. Tell me your journey to this undieting, because you are a trailblazer. You are a leader in the undieting space. You're one of the few Black women that are doing this work. There's others I can see actually now in the last one. Maybe you have more expertise than me, maybe because I just started social media 3 years ago. But I would say in the last like 2 years or so, I've been seeing a lot more folks, right, talking about this. But you were one of the first ones.
Yeah, it's so important. And, you know, I think that when they see one person talking about it, they feel more comfortable. And I also, you know, I didn't, even when I finally got my license, my dietitian's license, and I started, I still was not in the anti-diet space. Like I was still, I mean, it was still very much diet culture. And I started learning from people. I started following accounts and learning and really kind of diving into what this actually meant, how it stemmed from. Because even I remember the first time, this was in 2020 when, you know, everything was happening in the world, right? And I remember that was the first time I saw how someone posted, and gosh, I wish I remembered who. It was how there is a pipeline from white supremacy to diet culture. And I was like, what is she talking about?
I'm interested.
And that was the first time. Yeah, that was the first time I saw that. And I was like, what? And then, but the more you read, the more you listen, you're like, oh my gosh. And then I read Sabrina Strings.
Of course. Sociologist.
Black Body. Yes. I highly recommend everybody read that book. And even like learning about the history of food, I posted something on social media the other day. Cause I always find it fascinating, to talk about like how clean eating stems from this, you know, Puritan
racism, of course. Colonialism. Yeah.
And people don't see. So when you post things, you have like, it's really interesting to see the reaction where people are like, I had no idea. No, exactly. And I think that that's the point, is to see that this doesn't just come about, you know, this didn't just come out of nowhere. There's a pipeline.
Yes.
And so I'm still learning, you know, and I think we all are, and we all should. Because again, no one's perfect, right? And I think that it's really, the more I'm learning, the more fascinating it is, like the history of food. And also now, another fun fact, like even pancake mix, you know, learning where that came from, like when you think of Aunt Jemima, it was because that's when slavery had ended. So a lot of white women didn't know how to cook. So they had to make something because all their slaves were freed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's how like pancake mix came about. And they put Aunt Jemima on there.
Of course.
So it would be like this,
exemplifying, you know, the mommy.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just fascinating. I mean, it makes sense.
It's, yeah, it does.
You know, fascinating. Yes. Though. I'm like, wow.
Yes. So you're like a food historian now.
Well, I'm learning the more. I don't know how this started. Like now I can't stop. Every single time I learn a new fact, I go on this like deep dive.
Yeah.
I think it's like this hyper fixation. Yeah. But I'm also one of those weird, I always loved history. So I'm always one of those weird ones that there's this show called The History of Food. I think it's on the History Channel. I forget where, but I'm like, I'm always fascinated.
Yes. Oh my God. I love that. We share that in common. You know, in sociology, since it's interdisciplinary, there's like social, historical sociology, political sociology, so much branches and specializations. And I'm glad that you're bringing this lens in the work that you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're going beyond your profession, right? You're intersecting with these other disciplines to bring a more holistic understanding about food. And I think that's what we need to continue to move the needle, right? That we can't just see food from one dimension, right? It's interdisciplinary and it is very nuanced and complicated and messy. And sometimes it's contradictory. Like it doesn't have to always make sense, you know? I mean, I feel like that's one of the struggles that I have when I want to talk about food. It's like, it could be this, 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 and all this. Like all these are truths about food.
Yes. Exactly. I think nuance is always missing. And that's why social media is hard, because you can't say everything and any, you know.
And the carousel post of 10 slides.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's hard to really try to get every point across. I think that nuance is so important, and it's always missing, I think, in social media, which is understandable, right? Social media, I don't know how many characters you're allowed to type out, but it's not a lot, you know? And so, and then you're going to have people who didn't quite interpret it correctly, or, you know, I sometimes intentionally didn't interpret it, or some, you know, it's really, I love social media for learning, but as far as really, do I think that it encompasses all the learning someone should be doing? No. You know, so that's also important to really kind of go out on your own and see something and say, oh, I'm going to look into this.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes that's missing.
And I, you know, as an educator, I always think like, how can we bring equity into our communities, into the work that we do? And for me, thinking of folks who may not have access to resources or to time or to education, and they're getting some of this through social media. So it's also for folks to check people's credentials, you know.
Yeah.
So like these, I just get so frustrated, and I don't even know how to explain that feeling of like you have these so-called influencers with thousands and hundreds of thousands of followers, and like they can have such a big impact and they're just not doing it, you know? And folks who do have credentials, you know, sometimes are then questioned, like their credentials are questioned.
Always. You know? And just like,
it's so harmful. You know, it's like, you don't know how much it took me to get a PhD. And then you're saying I'm a fucking joke. Like,
yeah, exactly. Because they're not, you're not saying what they want. You know, it's so funny. Like, I think, I don't know if you follow Clara, your dietitian BFF.
She's amazing. I love her. She gives a fuck.
I know. That's the level that I want to achieve.
Same here.
She's even also Gloria. Leo.
Yeah,
she's
like, oh, Leo. Really? Oh, gosh.
But she once was saying, and I think it was a TikTok that she had, which cracked me up. She said, okay, so I'm a dietitian who just wants to post about reminding you to eat, because let's face it, many of us are super busy and we forget to eat, right? She's like, yet that will not get as many views, or people will, you know, come down and say that I don't know what I'm talking about. And she was like, but yet women on the other side of TikTok are doing coffee enemas, you know, sticking it up their bum. And she said that a million views, no one's questioning it.
Right.
You know, it's because, and so there's this like weird, you know, there's this like disconnect.
It is.
I think it's like the more, and I'm sure I can look into this, but there definitely is, the more outrageous you know, your
your sound.
It seems to really capture the audience, which, you know, I understand. Right. But at the same time, all I'm doing is telling you to just drink water.
Exactly.
And yet someone will say, but you didn't say this. It's like, I'm just reminding you to drink water. Like,
folks like forget that. And I remind myself, you know, that we will always be criticized. And I say, well, why don't they do the work? You know, they, and fácil critican, they criticize so easily, but like, fuck, you're not doing shit.
No,
you're not doing this work. So like, you don't even know the time, the intellectual time, the personal, the emotional, the spiritual, everything that goes into a freaking post, and then for someone to completely invalidate it.
It's beyond me. Like, emotional, for sure. I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't think people realize that either. That even, and I don't care if it's just posting a selfie, like whatever the post is, you're putting it out there. I mean, unless your account is private. but you're putting it out there. And I think that sometimes people kind of don't think about that.
They take it for granted. Somehow you're less human. Like you're, because you're, I don't know how to explain. You're the same person. You have feelings, you also, you everything, you know, but it's easier to be a bully, right? For having a candid conversation about how fucking hard it is to be on social media. And I see other content creators who are honest about that too, not many. And because it's a lot of vulnerability. And for me, it's like, I just want to be me and even share like my fucking struggles, because I'm a person and I want to make sure people know, like, I'm just like you. I'm like just an another person. I'm not making any of this stuff up, because we need to humanize. Right? Or experiences and the work that we're doing, that it's not easy. It's like we're going against mainstream society, and like, we haven't we done that all our lives anyway?
Yeah, exactly. And it's really frustrating. I think that you summed it up really well. Like, sometimes they don't see you as human. And I think they're just like looking at the post, just seeing a screen, and they're not associating it with like a person behind. So I think that, and that comes across with sometimes comments, DMs, and quite honestly, I don't even look at DMs anymore, because it's too much. Even from like trauma dumping, sometimes I'm just like, my space is not for you to trauma dump. I don't want to sound like I don't care, but this is, it's not fair for me, and it's not fair for others reading either. Like the trauma dumping too.
Or this expectation that how do you navigate this? And it's still rooted in, we're still talking about like undieting and diet culture. It's connected, like the labor of women of color, right? The unseen and the emotional labor of folks to just have this liberty of feeling like I can ask you anything, and you're like, you're gonna respond, like like somehow you're accessible all the time, you know, and that is like rooted in white supremacy, and that is part of diet culture. So even 100%. That, just talking about like, not only the content that we're bringing forward, but like how we're negotiating behind the screen, you know, we're not talking about that, but that's also like emotional labor, and that's stress, and that's fatigue, racial fatigue too.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So it's a ton. It's a lot of, I think, layers involved with social media.
Yes. So tell me, Shauna, a friend in your own definition, or like, what is diet culture?
I define it as a system that profits off of people's insecurities. It is worth billions of dollars. It keeps going up. I think last time I checked, it was like 75 billion or something like that, but it keeps going up. And it just stems from there's a lot, right? Misogyny, there's racism, all the isms, there's elitism, right? All of it is just so intertwined with diet culture, because it's about making you feel bad about yourself. And what products can you buy? How to make yourself feel smaller, right? It's all intertwined. And I think that, you know, I notice a lot of people brushing off the word diet culture. They're like, what? Like, what are you making up? You know, particularly white men, right? Surprise, surprise.
Cisgender, heterosexual.
Cisgender, exactly. Like, upper class. No shocker there. But it's so interesting. And how people don't see sometimes the intersectionality,
right?
Which are important to talk about. Because yes, we can talk about, I want you to feel comfortable eating a cookie, right? But I also want you to recognize other systems of diet culture, right? Because what I notice is a lot of, even my colleagues, right? A lot of white women, they love talking about diet culture and misogyny and that type of thing. But once you talk about racism, what? You know, because they feel uncomfortable,
of course,
because they're white. And
of course, they're not unpacking their privilege.
Exactly. They realize, you know, part of dismantling white supremacy is knowing that you benefit from it. Saying that you are racist, but knowing you benefit from it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
thank you.
They want to talk about that. Yeah, yes. It's just like how I I try to also acknowledge, like, even though I'm a Black woman, like, mm-hmm. yes, I do have been privileged. Mm-hmm. That's why I know my message is better received. Yes. I know this. Yes. You know, and especially within the Black community, we can talk mm-hmm. about featureism, colorism. Yes, color, I know yes. that I'm benefiting from a lot. Yes. And I can recognize mm-hmm. that. And, mm-hmm. you know, so it's important to talk about. It yes. doesn't mean that I, you know, still don't get
exactly
mean comments, but yeah. it's like I know these things, so that's mm. what I'm asking you to do as well. Like, you should mm. be recognizing your privilege. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah. I appreciate your being candid, Shauna, and I've been mm-hmm. thinking a lot about this. Perhaps we can do a collaborative post on, like, on this, on thin mm-hmm. privilege and being a woman of color. And I've talked about thin privilege in the past as well, and I've gotten good feedback, a good response, and then negative as well. Mm-hmm. It's recognizing, like, everyone who's listening, we all have some level of privilege, right? We embody both, right? Being, we can be an oppressor and be oppressed, right? But what is important here is to recognize, like, what privilege do I carry, and how does that show up in the world, and how do I divest from it, right? And mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I do as a professor, and, like, trying to do that in social media, especially with white folks. But it's also mm-hmm. like not our responsibility, right? As as professionals, mm-hmm. as human beings, as women of color, to be educating other, like, white folks about their privilege. That's very taxing and exhausting.
And because at the end of the day, interesting. I don't even know how to describe it. Like, maybe this dissonance, like cognitive dissonance mm-hmm. or something, where you know you have to know
mm-hmm. yeah.
but at the same time mm-hmm. totally disregarding it or mm-hmm. putting your own feelings before that,
right?
That's more so what it is, because mm-hmm. you know it's really interesting. I forget who, again, I'm getting into politics, mm-hmm. but I see such, like, a parallel.
Of course, they're all connected.
Yeah, I forget, of course, right? Food is political.
Of course, yes.
Said it. It wasn't AOC. Maybe it was. I don't remember. But anyway, sorry. Someone said, they were just like, you notice how people always say that there is no such thing as hierarchy with folks or any sort of privilege, but yet they work so hard not to dismantle it.
Right.
So they know it's there.
Yes.
Because if they didn't think it was there, or if they didn't know it was there, like mm-hmm. they claim, why are you working so hard against it?
Exactly, because you benefit from it.
You know, you're benefiting from it.
Yes.
Like, stop.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and, you know, and this is an invitation for folks who hold different privileges to recognize what they are and how we can decenter and dismantle that. And mm-hmm. let's talk about how are we doing that as women of color who have thin privilege? How are you divesting from thin privilege? How does that look like in your everyday life and in the work in social media?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think it's so important to talk about, because at the end of the day, I mean, I would love to, I just don't have the privilege of doing that, right? Mm-hmm. As a Black woman, I would love to act. There's a level of ignorance. I'm not going to say that it's ill intention mm-hmm. from people, but there's a level of ignorance, not recognizing it, or not mm-hmm. not choosing to recognize it, I should say, you know, because in a way you're putting your feelings before what's mm-hmm. actually happening, which is the problem. You know, mm-hmm. I would love to say, well, yeah, okay, I'm thin, but I still get, like, random people in my DMs calling me the N-word. So mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. I shouldn't have to recognize it. No, I still have to recognize that.
Yeah.
And exactly. also recognize that, you know, I'm yes. still, you know. So it's like mm-hmm. there's this weird dissonance, I think, sometimes mm-hmm. for people. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's why having an intersectional lens is so important, is recognizing mm-hmm. that it's going to shift, it's going to change depending on the context and the interactions that you have with folks. It's like Patricia Hill Collins talks about the matrix of dominations, and also, what did she say, the different levels of oppression, right? And mm-hmm. so the fact that we're thin does not negate that we experience discrimination and racism, right? And mm-hmm. that we have other marginalized identities that also continue to oppress us and limit us. So mm-hmm. you can have that truth of, I hold this privilege, And how am I using it to dismantle the system or to talk about these conversations? And I think that 100%. You're doing that work. And I would love to say that I'm also trying to do it.
Yeah, no, I think you are. Yeah, for sure. I definitely see your post. I think I saw a post once about thin privilege, which I thought was really good.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a long time ago. And then I brought it back again. And then I talked about thin privilege, and then I had a white woman in a bigger body talked about white privilege, you know, mm-hmm. So I love to collaborate with other folks who are interested in moving these conversations forward, which is part of the undieting space, you know, yeah. So as mm-hmm. stressful because of the backlash, but as stressful as it is in that sense, I also feel like it's rewarding mm-hmm. because, I mean, we're pivoting, we're creating mm-hmm. social change, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, I love to think that.
Yeah, no, I think so too. I think it's important. And I used to get stressed out about posting things. And you know, you can already tell after posting for so long, you know, the comments you're going to get, right?
Yeah,
like, you know, I wish I could make money. I'm like, on oh, the type my gosh, of comments yes. I was going to get, I'd be rich. Cause I already know what's coming, but mm-hmm. it's really interesting when people are, and I get it. I get mm-hmm. being nervous too. Mm-hmm. But I think that sometimes, you know, people afraid of losing followers. Yeah. And I say, that's mm-hmm. a good thing, mm-hmm. you know, because you're not, there are 8 billion people on this planet. It's exactly. a lot of people. You're not going to please everybody, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's really important to stick to what you right. Hold truthful.
That's right.
And what you're passionate about, and your audience will find you. And yes. I think that, you know, cause I keep hearing about people mm-hmm. being scared to post things mm-hmm. because, you know, they don't mm-hmm. know how it's going to be mm-hmm. taken, which I mm-hmm. get.
Yeah.
But at the same time, people will actually trust you more when you're yeah. authentic.
Yeah.
Talk about social justice. That's why I talk a lot about all of these things, mm-hmm. food is political, et cetera. And I'm still shocked mm-hmm. that people, mm-hmm. some people stay,
you mm-hmm. know, you know, who is your core, you know, your community.
Yeah. Cause you speak to that group of people. That's
exactly.
The whole point.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I appreciate that, that honesty, because, you know, it's not even about like followers. It's like, for me, it has always been like community building, knowing you yeah. and building community with you, and you know, how that shows in social media and like outside on like in this space. And that is like the purpose, to create this social consciousness and shift in our thinking, because that's part of the critical analysis, right? And healing yeah. so that folks can take these conversations with their communities, right? So it has like this trickle domino effect, right?
Exactly.
And it's because of these conversations that are not easy. And I do find like a lot of like, even in the undying space and even among Latino platforms, mm-hmm. I feel like piensan que estoy loca. They think like I'm crazy. Like, what mm-hmm. the fuck are you talking about? Like, this is not true. You're not,
oh, totally.
All this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, fuck. Like, and it makes it hard, because it's like, you know, we're a handful of Latinas doing this work. You know, there's Alina, there's myself, there's a couple of other folks, but mm-hmm. it's like, it's a handful versus
yeah.
hundreds and thousands of diet culture. So of course they're going to question your message, because it's mm-hmm. it's not popular, right?
It's not. And I, one thing about Delina, it's so funny, because I'm in a group chat with her. We're always like, you know, we're always talking about these things. And mm-hmm. she said, she's like, sometimes your worst critics are from your own people,
yes,
because they're still so indoctrinated themselves
yeah.
in this message. It's mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. You know, and so when you mm-hmm. say things like, actually, it's not your fault mm-hmm. for XYZ, or mm-hmm. yes, or Delina talks about this a lot, where our foods have all of these,
yes.
you know, which is true. All of these benefits, mm-hmm. all of this nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And people, she said that sometimes her worst critics or the mm-hmm. worst people in the comments mm-hmm.
haters. Yes, yeah, that's what it is. Like, oh, I hate that. The crap, like pulling the crap. It sounds like crap,
wow.
like a crab.
Yes, it's true. I'm just like, and same thing for me. Like, you know, when people, excuse me, I always, it's unfortunate, because sometimes the comments that I get from like other Black women where it's like, no, being at this weight is not healthy. I can't believe you're promoting this. Yeah. So I'm not promoting anything. I'm promoting being healthy for you. And then we also have to dissect what healthy means, right? They don't want to hear that. And it's really unfortunate because it shows how like kind of this society, like how we hear these messages from birth and just,
It's like boxed in, like you can't think outside of this. And if you do, if you dare, we're going to make sure that we tell you to go back in line, you know?
That's what it is. That's what it is. It's so weird. And actually, it's so funny because there was this TikTok I saw and she was talking about this, like, the monkey experiment where you have these monkeys and they were trying to get a banana. And each time they got a banana, they were sprayed. So they finally realized we shouldn't be doing this. Should be grabbing the banana. And so every single time a new monkey was introduced into the group and tried to grab the banana, they beat up that monkey because they were like, no, we're going to be sprayed. But that just shows how after a while we just do things because we're told without questioning why, without really figuring out, wait a minute, where did this stem from? We're just going, we're just like robots, you know?
Like sheep,
and I think
right?
that's so it's so prevalent. So I always think about that experiment. I'm like, wow, that's sort of what we as humans.
Yeah, you know, we've been conditioned our life. Yeah. And it's not just us, but like our parents, grandparents, like so many generations. So that's why when we do, I'm sure that's why you also do this. It's like we're doing it for ourselves, for like, but for all the past generations, we're breaking diet culture. We're saying fuck you.
Exactly. It's so important.
So I have two more questions. One is, what do you see right now in the undieting space that you cringe or that you're like, oh, you roll your eyes, like conversations?
I think the amount of privilege that I see, you know, and I always try to say that I want to believe that everyone has the best intention or, you know, with getting their message across or promoting health, but it kind of makes me cringe a little bit when people don't recognize the privilege. You know, you have folks and of course the misinformation, right? Like you have folks walking around a grocery store talking about this food is bad because of these ingredients, which is misinformation most of the time. I'm just like, those aren't bad ingredients. Those are just chemicals like spelled out, you know, that's all it is. However, I don't think we're ever talking about things like food insecurity because people, when they think of poverty, they think of other countries. They don't realize that our country is filled with food insecurity. You know, even I live in, you know, New York, and even in New York City, where we think of it's so densely populated, there are so many pockets where a supermarket is like 2 miles away, you know, and it's very inconvenient. So there is food insecurity, food access, and that's not talked about enough. There's sort of an elitism when you're talking about don't eat this food. That might be the only food someone has access
to.
So it's, you know, it just drives me.
Or what I eat in a day, or go come with me grocery shopping. Even the undieting space, I can see that, and I'm sure you know who these folks are. Like, not everyone. I mean, not a lot of people go to Trader Joe's here where I live. You know, like I go to Trader Joe's for certain stuff, but like my community, like not a lot of people, especially working class immigrants, are not going to go to Trader Joe's. So.
Trader Joe's, there aren't even a lot. I go to one because it's near the office where I work, but it's not really convenient. You know, it's not like a supermarket. And so there is even privilege in that too.
Exactly. Or where they're located, like where the grocery stores are located, you know, there's nothing. I just want to promote our ethnic culture foods and promote these ethnic stores that we sometimes like people put them in a hierarchy to like less than, and they go to the other mainstreams. But that was more of a side note. So Shanna, what are you currently working on? What are your plans for 2024?
So definitely trying to, I'm trying to get a hold of a newsletter. Like I think I'm becoming better at it now. Like I started like years ago and then stopped. So now I finally, I'm finally doing it. So I'm working, trying to be more consistent with my newsletter, because unlike social media, and even with the newsletter, can't even get all my points across, right? But I find that when I write, I am better with my words and how I come across. So I really like the newsletter, and also, you know, writing in general, I love to do. So writing more. Also, speaking of writing, I do have a book coming out in August. Yes. Which I'm so excited about.
This is
so
exciting. That's coming out. It's just like, yes. Side note, I have a book.
Yeah, I know. Well, more writing, you know. So that we'll be hearing more about that. But yes, so that's all
so exciting. So tell us, Shana, where can people find you on social media, and any offerings, if you have any?
Yeah, definitely. I think that I'm pretty easy to find, actually, because all my social media, when I think about it, is the Nutrition Tea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so pretty easy to find. So on all the platforms, definitely more engaged on Instagram, I would say. Just, you know, I'm an elder millennial, so, you know, I can't really do the TikTok thing, but I'm there as mm-hmm. well. And also my newsletter, if you are on Substack, that's where I am as well, which I try to put out at least 2 per week. Wow. So that's where you can find my work. Yeah.
Wonderful. Muchas gracias. Is there anything else you would like to add? I know I can keep, I think I can talk to you for hours, spend the whole day with you. Yeah. Anything else you want to add that I didn't ask that you want the audience to take away with?
Just remembering, you know, when we're talking about food, that it just encompasses so many aspects. Like, yes, it's important to get our nutrients and things like that, but just always remembering that there's more to food than just fueling your body. Like there's a joyful component. Mm-hmm. So just always reminding people to enjoy what they're eating as well is just an important aspect.
Yes, please find pleasure and joy in your mm-hmm. eating. Pues muchas gracias. Thank you so much. I have a lot of gratitude for your time today and just all the work that you do. Gracias, gracias. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much as well.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I will see you in the next episode of Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita. Nos vemos.
Muchas gracias por acompañarme en Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Especially be sure to rate and review the podcast if you really like it. If you leave me a review on Apple Podcasts, you become eligible for a free 30-minute coaching session. That's right, así como escuchaste, one free session. Once you leave your review, you can screenshot it and email it to me, and I'll send you a link to sign up. If you didn't like it, don't worry, así está bien. Follow me on social media, on Instagram and TikTok, @Dr. Hortensia Jimenez.